I'm Brad Cresswell. With me is Mary Claire Murphy. Hello, Mary Claire.
Good afternoon.
And we also have a special guest in front of us. That is Eric Santos. Welcome, Eric.
Hi.
Eric, you are the chair of the composition department, yeah?
That's right.
And so you have students, you're still writing music. What is a typical kind of balance for you between writing and teaching?
Oh, boy, what's the balance? I don't even know the answer to any of those questions. Every day is a new day in composition. You know, there's a part of you that has to open up the table completely and have conversation with folks. And sometimes there's something that you have in mind that you want to express more clearly and more critically. So I think it's a give and take.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your background, what brought you to composing, what brought you here to Michigan?
Oh, wow. Let's see. I grew up in a musical family. My father was a renowned composer from the Philippines who moved here in his 40s, I believe, and never went back. My brothers, two brothers, are both musicians, and my mother was a minister and a beautiful Wagnerian soprano singer for quite a long time. And so I grew up in a musical family. Music's always been part of my daily thing, and it was a natural fit for me to go into education as well because I love the creative process.
Well, with a composer father and a Wagnerian singing mother, you had little choice.
That's right.
You didn't have any moments of rebellion where you said, I'm going to be an accountant instead of a composer?
Well, my father, actually, he asked me at the end of high school, what are you going to do? And I told him musician, and he said, yeah, I don't know if you really want to do that. It's not the most lucrative profession, but, he knew where my heart was. And so it was a kind of an act of rebellion just to go into music. But rebellion, I guess, is kind of part of my personality. I've always, you tell me to go right, I'll go left.
That's interesting. That's interesting because you are, in a teaching environment, academic environment, there are rules that one has to follow. Do you feel like in teaching composing, when you're helping composers find their voice and work on their technique, that it's a little more loose than what you would think?
Yeah. Well, again, there's the very loose side where you just hear, pieces of vague ideas floating around, and then there's moments where you dig your heels in and say, what do you mean by this? And are you sure that's the strongest solution? Or, where is this going? Do you have any sense? Maybe you have too much of a sense? Maybe we need to go someplace where you don't know so much. So there's always a give and take, as I said, working with a student with what they have as their strengths or their weaknesses and helping them to understand which is which at the time because they switch once in a while.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Speaking of compositional individual voices, I was just wondering how you would describe your own compositional voice.
You think that question gets easier, but it just gets further and further apart. I've always been somebody who likes to just do as much as possible. I like to be involved in as many different ways. I love collaborative work. I've loved very esoteric classical things. I've loved very popular things. I've loved the electronic realm, the improvisational realm, dance theater. As much variety as I possibly can get. So that's always been one of my loves. And that is, I guess, my voice is constantly, I guess looking for other ways to go.
Yeah. Tell us about The Seer, because we're going to listen to a couple of excerpts from that. This is music by you. And what can you tell us about this piece?
It's a very mysterious piece. I don't even to this point, I thought I knew what I was doing, but then every time there's a new performance, it shows me something else I wasn't aware of. And basically, I was asked to write a piece by Professor Emeritus Michael Hathcock, our beloved symphonic band director who just retired. He asked me to write a piece for our Professor Scott Piper, Dr. Piper. I love his voice. I loved Michael Hathcock's conducting voice and his vision. And he basically, when he asked me to write a piece, he asked me to do something that was on the heels of a piece I wrote called Dreamer, which was a song cycle based on Langston Hughes. He asked me to do an arrangement for band. And I said, why don't I just do something new? It's been around for a while. So I did another Langston Hughes song cycle, although there's a surprise poet in the middle, a surprise appearance by Rainer Maria Rilke. And I think that what it was originally was something, in my mind, it was almost like a landmark to my 50s. I just turned 50 when I was asked to write this piece. And I wanted to do something that was kind of monumental and something that would express something deep down, which wasn't clear to me. So there was a lot of dictation from the dreams and trying to figure out how to render that into some kind of practical daily language. And as I continued to write the piece, it had a lot of personal value. There's a lot of autobiographical elements. But then as I started thinking of Scott Piper as the tenor, it stopped being my voice and more his voice, and it's much bigger than mine, and it fills up an auditorium like you wouldn't believe, and there was so much power, so I started following some other compositional decisions with him in mind, but I think inevitably it turned out to be a kind of a sphinx of my own life.
Yeah. That's great. So,
yeah, I think, as I said, as I've had multiple performances of it, I start to think, what was it that I really meant back then? And there's much more than I knew I was doing, I think, at the time.
Which ties in directly with the title of The Seer,
basically.
We're going to hear a few excerpts from this. We can also hear the Rainer Maria Rilke poem, if you choose. That's coming at the very end of this.
Yeah, we can... maybe we don't need to. That's the sort of, it's one of the we'll most spacious and soft parts of the, I don't know if it stands up on its own. It seems to have a lot more when it's cradled in the power of the outside movements.
Well, I mean, as they always say, you leave them wanting more, right?
Yeah.
So this is Scott Piper, the tenor, along with the University of Michigan Symphony Band, right? Mm-hmm. Michael Hathcock conducting, music of Eric Santos from The Seer here on FM 91.
Wake up!
We're going to stop right there with the movement from The Seer. We heard a couple of excerpts there. Scott Piper, the tenor, music by Eric Santos, who is our guest for this next couple of minutes here on FM 91. It's FM 91 on the road today, and today only we are coming to you from the University of Michigan. I'm Brad Cresswell. Mary Claire Murphy is here with me. And Eric Santos, the music of yours that we just heard, you know, I wanted to ask you, in the part where Scott is talking about the squirrels and the circle cages, and you hear the ound, ound, ound repeated, is that pre-recorded? How does that work?
Our sound engineer, there's a delay unit, so it's creating echoes electronically. Every time he would have one of those loud words, the engineer would turn up the volume and catch the word and then turn it back down again, so you'd only hear that one word.
So he doesn't have to keep repeating it.
Right.
Himself.
Right.
That's good to know. It's really interesting music and poetry, and you hear, you know, repeated phrases. There's no doubt in your mind eventually as to what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. You can hear the poetry being repeated in the same way that they used to do with operas back in the day. You know, you'd sing the same thing over and over until the audience got it, right? But that's really interesting.
Thank you.
What do you think, Mary Claire?
It is really interesting. I was wondering if you could walk us through the process when you were first asked to do this and you sat down and you have that blank page in front of you. Where do you go from there?
Well, it's such a... It's a process with so many different stages. There were multiple iterations of the musical score, a couple of them by hand on pencil, and then go back and forth to the computer. I do some a kind of a MIDI mock-up, and then want to get it into the engraving program too. And then once, you know, you keep passing those back and forth until you can kind of get a bigger view of the whole thing. Because the piece was kind of multiple entry points into it. You know, there are times, for example, I had an idea of where the piece was leading, and at an earlier stage, and I thought it was going a certain place, and then I felt, you know, the energy is just dying right in the middle. I don't know what's going on. I kept fighting, and then eventually I said, you know something, I think maybe the middle section would actually go great at the beginning, and boom, there it was. Yeah. You know, and then let's say jump ahead many more months after multiple visits with Scott Piper and Michael Haithcock, and then talking about, you know, what are you thinking, technically, and all this. The piece still not completely done. And then at the very end, as I'm composing, and maybe even in the orchestrational part, I thought, you know something? I get to the very end. I said, I think this is good. This would work really well if you take the opening things that they say at the very beginning of the piece he's talking about, you know, the words that he uses at the very beginning of the piece, and then he revisits them at the end. So actually the circle is complete. But if I saw that coming too far ahead of the game, it would have seemed very contrived. But it was literally, you know, when I got to the end of the composition that I said, oh, there's a hook here. Mm-hmm. And that hooks onto the beginning. And I went shink and just hooked them together. And it just suddenly arc of connection from the beginning to end. Mm-hmm. It was a gift. You had to kind of earn your way to it. As I said, otherwise it would have seemed like you'd planned it and it wouldn't have had the impact. But somehow I was lucky enough to receive that at the very last minute. So the process was like that. It was just constantly, you think you know what you're doing, and then you don't, and then you do, and then you don't.
Yeah. Well, you make it sound so easy.
To myself as well. You, that's the problem, you know. You have some success, something works really well, and then you feel like, oh, great, I got this, and you try the next piece, and you say, oh, I stink, you know, I don't know how to do this anymore. And that's actually what you're aiming for, is to have a zero, an empty table again, so you have something new to say. You don't want to repeat yourself, or at least not consciously so. You want to think, oh, shoot, there's that thing again, I did. But, you know, if you see it happening too far ahead of time, you feel like you're trying to pull a fast one. People can see that, too.
Yeah.
You know, so there needs to be some kind of feeling that you're listening to what the composer is unaware of and is finding out in the moment as well. So how do you convey that? I don't know.
Yeah. What do you hope that listeners take away from this particular piece, The Seer?
I don't know. I guess some of that primal energy that I felt from it, for sure. Yeah. I feel every time I hear it, there's a certain kind of visceral thing that's constantly coming through, and it's new every time. So there's that fire, you know. The way that the piece begins is kind of startling, and I love that. It works even if I've seen it a bunch of times. So there's that. I hope it gives people a certain amount of things to chew on that I don't even really know how to explain.
Right.
Although I don't want to just go, well, it's what you think it is, you know. I have what I think it is and what it's, but I hopefully that people, you know what I love, and I hope that people keep getting from it, is I've heard this from people who have done it and just heard it. They said they hear the piece at the beginning and they go, what is that? And then they listen to the next movement and they go, what is that? All the way through to the end, and they go, I'm left with, what is that? You know, even if it burned itself into my brain, because there's a certain obvious quality to it, too. Yeah. That's not hiding too much, but when you look at it straight, you still can't define it. It's just feeling like, I'm looking at something, I can't tell you what it is, but I see it clearly. Mm. I hope that's what they can continue to get from it, you know, that they try to explain to somebody and they can't.
A little bit of rubbernecking involved also, in that you're thinking something goes by and you want to think about that, but then there's something else that got you interested, you know.
Yeah, so, and it keeps coming back around, just like the poem at the beginning says. And and at the end you go, wow, I just came around again, but how did you get there? Like, I don't even know myself.
Well, so. Food for thought.
Yes, that's what I hope it continues to be.
Yeah, what are some upcoming projects for you, Eric?
Well, there's some I can't really talk about, but I'm writing more band music.
Okay.
It's not been publicly announced yet, but I'm on the road to that. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. I love writing for that. I'm working on a piece of, I guess, a collection of my own solo songs that I sing and perform for myself. And I'm hoping, and maybe hopefully getting some other folks involved to expand some of those songs, so it's not just a soloist singing. So that's the next big thing, I think.
Yeah.
I've also been working with my band October Babies. We're trying to tie up a new record. Actually, we've got a couple of records we're trying to tie up. Yeah, so those are, I think, the big ones at the moment.
Well, that's great. It was so wonderful to spend time with you. And I love watching composers listening to their own music. Mm-hmm. You know, you can gather so much from that, and the way that you were reacting to getting into the kind of primitive aspect of it, you know.
I appreciate it. Well, the music and the people who have played it, they've played so much soul that it just always it lifts me right out of my seat every time. So I'm not just like... and I guess I can say I love the music. I love the music. It came out of my love and in the fight that I've had with it, as well as the reconciliation I always have with it. So I'm happy that I'm still moved by it, too.
Eric Santos is the chairman of the composition department here at the University of Michigan. Eric, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you
for spending time with
us.
Thank
you, Mary Claire.